And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
On today's episode of The Glue Guys, Scary Hours is here. Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and maybe Ben Simmons are gonna play in the playoffs.
That is scary. Your mic is scary, Mike. That's some scary.
What is it? The mic's...
It's perfect. Good ominous energy. Telling a good ghost story.
Hey, we're going to talk Celtics. Celtics Nets.
Fired up. It's the playoffs.
Guys, this is Mike here. Say hello, Brian.
Hello.
Check us out on Twitter at BK Glue Guys, NetsDaily.com, The Athletic. Get yourself behind the paywall at TheAthletic.com/Glue Guys. Brian.
Michael, are you okay? Are you?
Tell people what you're seeing.
Are right you now. At the bottom of a well right now? Where are you?
I don't know. Is that light? I'm in my car. I am on vacation. I'm in Charleston, South Carolina, where
the internet doesn't exist. They just got the internet.
Yeah. It's all just ghost stories and weak ass internet down here. Yeah.
We won't spend too much time on it. It had to be mentioned though.
So if you're for the YouTube audience, I suggest everyone dive into YouTube for just the beginning. I look like I am in the Blair Witch Project and Brian looks like he's in Batman.
Well, yeah, I mean, I kind of wanted to match your like Born from the Darkness energy. So I went with the Bane background. Also, it felt like on theme for these Nets and the playoff journey that they're on. Like, I don't want to get bogged down in the details. We won the play-in in a super convincing win, you know, just, you know, start to finish a shellacking. So no worries there. That's all good.
Yeah.
You know, blew right past them. And now we're going to play the Boston Celtics in what is going to be a notable slobber knocker and a barn burner, Mike. So how do we want to go about dissecting this upcoming playoff matchup?
Well, here's what we're going to do. Brad and I are going to give our feelings first, and then we got so many amazing emails. And Brian, you're the master of emails.
Yep.
If we're getting into a conversation that involves an email, we'll do a shout out. We don't have the drops today because, again, I'm in my car in Charleston, South Carolina. I'm below the Mason-Dixon line, and I'm a little afraid about what may happen to me.
The
right
drops
now,
so. Might be outlawed where you are. They might not have the law may prohibit the drop. Mike, all right, top level Brian. Feelings and thoughts, give them to me now. Now.
Okay, so I watched the playing game, of course, and then I watched the TNT show. The TNT show, just like, there's something, of course, I mean, so many people talked about. It's such a special show. It's one of the greatest, you know, studio shows in the history of sports television.
Oh, wow.
And when they say something, it just does stick with me. Even though I know Charles Barkley doesn't end up knowing everyone on any roster for the most part. And
doesn't need to.
And Shaq often doesn't really say anything at all. And Kenny's great. I mean, I won't, no shots at Kenny Smith, but they do, I mean, of course, they know basketball. And they were all, Barkley, number one, ultra-confident that the Celtics are going to do work on them Nets. Mm. So that really stuck out to me. But I got to say, my emotions going into this, there's a couple of things. One, I remember last year, different teams, different coach coaching the Celtics. James Harden is not on this version of the Brooklyn Nets. But there is a mental edge that the Nets have over the Celtics right now. And those things change. Last playoffs, we saw the Milwaukee Bucks defeat the hated Miami Heat and sort of conquer the mental edge that they had, the Heat had over the Bucks. So I'm not saying it's an impossible thing, but I do think there's a distinct mental advantage. The Nets have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, two champions leading their team. And the Celtics' two best players are very, very good. Jason Tatum's a top 10 player in the NBA. And Jaylen Brown is, you know, all-star level, right? But they are unproven, ultimately, in the playoffs. They haven't reached the finals. And just last playoffs, they got embarrassed by your Brooklyn Nets. So I think there's the mental edge. There's the X factors of both teams having, and I know we're going to hit into all of this, and we're going to dive way more deep. Rob Williams.
Robbie.
Robin Williams has come back. He's got out of community college in, Southie?
Southie.
Goodwill Hunting.
Everything takes place in Southie.
So Robin Williams is back, and of course Ben Simmons, and we'll talk about that. So there's X factors involved. There's Ime, who was an assistant coach under Nash, and now he's, you know, already proved himself to be one of the best coaches in the NBA, going against Steve Nash. There's the Boston Celtics, you know, the awful trade that got committed, the murder that got committed on the Nets franchise. That history is there. So this is an extremely compelling series. Brian, this is going to shock you.
Okay.
I don't feel anxiety.
Oh my gosh.
No anxiety leading
to
this.
That's abnormal for you in any situation, let alone an anxiety inducing one.
I'm blown away myself.
Yeah.
There must be something in the southern air.
Have you been meditating? What kind of personal growth mission are you on?
I have, you know, I've been taking a lot of medication lately.
You've gotten that direction. Good. That's another one. That's a popular choice.
Mental and like Sudafed related also.
Sudafed. Got it.
So my brain is just getting blasted with chemicals. I think that's been very helpful. I usually approach these things from a level of anxiety. This series, I don't know. It's not that I'm confident the Nets are going to win, but I don't fear the Celtics like I do the Bucks. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
The Bucks scare me. Celtics, as fun as they may be for Celtics fans, they are unproven ultimately. So that's me dumping out my feelings while I sit in the front seat of my car.
It's a good feeling.
An alleyway in Charleston. Brian, please spare me and let me know what you think.
Well, I went out and I did what I usually do in situations like this, and I just went through both fan bases' Reddits, you know, and tried to assess the different levels of confidence or fear. And I got to tell you, just based on, you know, just an aggregate of all of what I've seen out there, it is like literally anything could happen in this series. There is people who are picking Nets to sweep. There are people picking Celtics to sweep. Nobody on either fan base seems afraid of the other team. It's just a perfect yin and yang storm here, Mike. And it's really like a yin and yang in a multitude of ways, right? Us, the cultureless star mercenaries against the stupid Boston Celtics memes of culture and all that stuff. Hate it, but that's what they do. On top of it, there's this other narrative that I think is underappreciated, which is that like the Celtics have had a very a compelling regular season by virtue of they started out so poorly, and then they had huge incentive to get really dedicated to being good in the regular season. The Nets similarly needed to be good towards the end of the season, but like the meme of do the Nets care about the regular season? It was true for a very short period of time, but through the vast majority of the season, we were good and just fell out of bed being good. And it didn't really optically look convincing. You and me were not super convinced. And then everybody else became very unconvinced. We had a pretty tragic couple of weeks and months there. But I still like am interested by the fact that there was a huge incentive for the Celtics to be really good in the regular season. And they appear to me to be a team that is built for regular season wins. You know, that's still like kind of true for them. They have the culture. Now they have a narrative incentive to, you know, basically win back their season after starting out so slow. Yada, yada, yada. There's all that. So my feeling going into this is, and this is kind of piggybacking off of what you said, is I'm a big I'm a believer in stories, Mike. I love a story. Mm. You know, it's why I'm so into.
You believe in stories, yes.
I believe in stories. It's why I love Peppa Pig. It's why I love the Marvel Universe. It's why I am a Harry Potter-aholic.
Have you been babysitting?
I'm using all of your Peppa cultural Pig pillars.
The touchstones of my life, yeah. You know what's so sad is that I was watching Peppa Pig with my son before bed, and then the thing we'd listen to for him to fall asleep was Harry Potter. So if I had jammed in a Marvel comic in there,
I mean,
you
there's still time. Movie. I mean, what are you going to do after you hang up with this call? Moon Knight is calling you. But so in terms of the narrative arc of the Boston Celtics, I feel attuned to when a thing is curdled and when it isn't. Obviously the Celtics fans are feeling super stoked on this team right now. They're feeling super hypey on the Boston Celtics. And I can't help but think that there is still this lingering narrative of we've seen this team in a lot of different variations over the years, and they have not had the sort of linear success one expects to see out of like a either progression trend or, you know, you're not doing well or you're doing well. So I lean into that a lot. I think that has a big sort of psychological effect. I think that when you are a part of a losing operation multiple times, it becomes really difficult to get over that hump. It's not, you know, this is sort of like 90s playoff basketball narrative arcs where you like, you know, try to beat the Pistons and then you finally do. Like, we don't see a whole lot of that. And there's a lot of retooling, and they have retooled. Obviously, like, you're not going to see Evan Fournier get torched like you did last year. And I guess Daniel Tice has been a pretty decent substitute for Time Lord. And, you know, so it's fundamentally like different on the fringes, but I still do worry about that kind of meme-y narrative arc, these are my feels-based feels. You know, I'm just going feels-based.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting is that, you know, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have had success in the playoffs. Like, the year that Kyrie was on the Celtics, and I forget what year it was, but it was the year before he had his full season and he finally decided to leave the team. So it must have been 2018 playoffs. What did they get to the Eastern Conference Finals? And they had, it was a young Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Al Horford and Gordon Hayward and Marcus Smart. You know, like, so the team has progressed, and then they took steps back, and then Kyrie, of course, left. Gordon Hayward left. Al Horford left. Everyone left. And now Al Horford's back with the team. So, like, there is some pedigree there with those guys.
Yeah, of course.
The reason why we're harping on it is that these things matter. You know, like, these things... Oh, wait, one sec. Sam's here for... She has a beer for me.
Oh, excuse my God. Me.
Hey. You're on the pod. How are you? Thanks, Snoo.
I love that. Love you. That's a great little detail. How do you have that arrangement figured out?
I messaged her to seem like I'm cool, to be like, she's going to bring me a beer, you know, but...
Smart.
I also just wanted a beer, and it's so hot in this car.
Yeah.
Narratives, we obsess over narratives, right? Like, we basically predict the NBA via what the headline's going to be
love,
in 6 months.
We love stories, Mike. We love stories.
Yeah. We're storytellers. Yeah. But we're John Lasseter's, except I think he got canceled. But then he's kind of back. The thing...
No comment.
It does... In the NBA, you have to go through some pain. And that is good for the Nets, because... This Nets team has already gone through all the pain possible. They've been tortured. They are, I don't know, what's some movie? They are Brie Larson in The Room, right? Mm. They've been tortured this season. Ooh.
Yeah.
Her and Jacob Tremblay. I haven't seen that movie.
You haven't?
I think, no.
Oh, you would like
God,
it?
God, no.
What?
Weren't they tortured? Weren't they just in a room?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's pretty tame. I think it's PG-13. You'd be fine. I'd be really surprised. Honestly, I'd be...
It's a feel-good movie?
It's definitely... You wrestle with a few things, but it's not, like, scary in the way. It's tense.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'll watch it with Rowan. But, So anyways, yeah, the Nets have gone through the pain, but they also have sort of masters of inflicting pain in Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And... The Ben Simmons thing is a big factor, but having two guys who know how to win big games, who know how to hit shots at the end of big games, Seth Curry, I would also put up there as a type of player who can hit those big shots. That's going to matter. You look at the Celtics, you talk about them being a regular season team. The thing that buoys me is, yes, we always think Jalen and Jason. Oh, my God, they're so scary. Marcus Smart, you know, potentially defensive player of the year. One of the best defensive teams in basketball. If you go really just beyond Jalen and Jason, they are an extremely flawed team, right? They don't have sort of that dynamic bench presence. Their bench is like Peyton Pritchard and Grant Williams. There's nothing that like comes off the bench and really scares you. Al Horford and Daniel Tice, because Robin Williams is out, that's what I will call him, because Robin Williams is out, I'm not afraid of Tice and Horford. They're fine. Not scared of them at all. So I think it makes sense why people are like, oh, the Celtics are going to crush them. They are a top 10 offense, a top 10 defense. They're the second best defense in the NBA. And they have these two young stars. Who's going to guard those guys? Who's going to guard Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant? You know, and then who's going to consistently guard Bruce Brown? Who Bruce Brown calls out the Boston Celtics immediately. Which, friend of the show, and I know that personality.
Yeah.
We talked to him.
A huge personality. An infectious
one. We love it. Yeah. Chip on the shoulder, baby.
On a both shoulders.
Tostitos.
Huge shoulders. Huge delts.
Should we do this quick break, then email, and we're diving more into the series?
I love that so much for us.
Quick break, come back, email, diving right in more to the series.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
And we're back, Ryan.
We're back.
We are not playing the drops because I don't think my computer can handle it while I'm in the car. But let's get to the email.
Mike, can I just say before we get there, as you get hotter and sweatier and drunker in this tiny space, I am so excited for what minute 40 of this podcast looks like.
This is a two-parter right now. This is a two. Yeah. I feel like, I don't know if you watch the show Minx on HBO Max.
I don't.
But what's his name? Nick Miller from New Girl, that Jake Johnson.
Too many names floating around in there.
It's just a big sweaty mess, and I love it. And that's the energy I want right now.
Well, I can't do the big drop because we don't have the John Cena thing. But I'll just, you know, heck, I'll just go out and say it. First up, cheer girl, I think. This is Jackie Grosskopfmanis. That's a name. And Jackie, thank you so much for writing in. Says, Jackie from Brooklyn here. Big fan of the pod. Listen to every episode. Thank Jackie. Question for your Celtics preview episode. What do you think about what Bruce Brown said in his post-game presser last night? Curious to hear if you think it was unwise to say, but also curious to hear what you think about the strategy he was suggesting more broadly. Also, any concern at all about Seth? Didn't like what we saw against the Cavs. Wondering if his ankle is getting worse. If so, what do we do to adjust? Mike, give us the abridged version of what Bruce Brown actually did say.
So this is amazing. And I love that this was said and that the conversation was already brought right into Celtics Nets, the sort of this rivalry. So immediately after the Cavaliers game, and I'm sure everyone has seen it, and the headlines are very weird about what Kevin Durant's irked. But Bruce Brown said, essentially, this is his quote, we can't let Tatum get 50. We got to be physical with them. now that they don't have Robert Williams, they have less of a presence in the paint, and we could attack Al Horford and Tice. So them not having Robert Williams is huge. Then Kevin Durant was asked about what Bruce Brown said, and he said, "We respect our opponents. We don't need to talk about what we're going to do to them. I just don't like that." But that's how Bruce is. He comes in and keeps the same energy throughout the whole season. And then there's a debate about what Kevin Durant said. It seemed like Kevin Durant said what he has coffee energy, that Bruce Brown has caffeine energy or something. Did you see that?
I actually didn't see the Kevin Durant's response to it. I just saw the headline. I thought he was memeing, but it sounds like he was being sincere, or I can't tell.
So here's Scott Cassiola from the New York Times, who follows us on Twitter. Shout out. He said, "It's believed that Durant maybe said that's caffeine pride talking." People believe that Kevin Durant attributed Bruce Brown's quote to the phrase "that's caffeine pride talking." And Scott's saying what Kevin Durant actually meant to say is "that's caffeine probably talking," meaning I guess Bruce Brown takes a shot of Nespresso.
Do you think he meant adrenaline? Do you think he was like searching for the word adrenaline and then
caffeine came up
with caffeine?
I think you're 100% right on
that. Think so? I feel like I just came up with it. It feels right though.
Let me ask you this. Is there any tangible difference to the fact that Bruce Brown says this? Like, does it motivate Al Horford and Daniel Tice any more? Like, does it have any effect on this series? If anything, I know he did not intend this. It's kind of a mind game to say, oh, we can attack them down low. Them now guarding against being attacked down low, and the Nets going like, we're going to go over the top. We're going to be firing mid-range fires. You know what I'm saying? Like, Bruce Brown, you know, just plain chess.
Here's the thing: we're going to be firing mid-rangers and threes by the third, fourth quarter, anyway. So, you know, whatever our plan is, it'll fade by the end of the first quarter. If I know anything about these 2022 Nets, it's that their plans don't last long.
And big facts from Bruce Brown. They should attack the basket now that Al Horford and Daniel Tice are there. Like, Robin Williams would make a huge difference in this series. And I'm sure we have a question about this. When Williams got his knee surgery, the timeline that he was given was 4 to 6 weeks. I think the start of the series is right around the four-week mark, almost getting to the four-week mark. So it's very possible that he could be back. But him not being there, I think he's the third most important player on the team after the Jays. I think he's more important than Marcus Smart because he can do so much for the Celtics defensively, and him not being there is just a massive deal.
I just don't want to do the thing that we do with every other team we play against. Like, we'll be missing a world-class, James Harden, a Ben Simmons, whoever, and then like we do the Dante DiVincenzo BS. You know, this is where I don't want to fall into. Yes, Time Lord's fine; he's great. All right, we get it, but he's not Ben Simmons. All right, and we still are missing the better player. I just want to make sure that we highlight that. to her second portion of the question, Seth Curry didn't look good against the Cavs. Also, we were just kind of hiding him as a decoy in the corner. He barely shot the ball, but it also looked like they were just basically daring Kessler Edwards to shoot the ball every time, and every time, instead of shooting the ball straight, he just pooped his pants. He just filled his pants with poop. So that was a suboptimal outcome if you're trying to win the game. But it was weird. The Seth Curry game was weird just because he was so he was just hidden away in the corner. Didn't seem like the normal Seth Curry that we expect. So Mike, are you worried about Seth in this series?
I'm very worried. Let me ask you this. If you were to rank the most important Nets, Ben Simmons included, Kyrie, KD are 1 and 2 in some order, where is Seth Curry on that list if we're including Ben Simmons in this series?
Can I say something? Can I just open up a bigger like can of worms out of this thing and completely derail us? So I keep seeing this argument being laid out there, and I think it's a fugazi. I think it's a bad argument, and I think anyways, here's the argument. So it's that like Ben Simmons can come back as a utility player, playing role player basketball, and it will super affect our ceiling as a championship contender team. And I really want to like take that argument and tomahawk dunk it into the trash, because it's really, you're trying for the best of both worlds, right? You're basically, you're admitting that like Ben Simmons is going to be a, you know, partially minutes restricted, you know, and because of the minutes restriction, slightly diminished player. But then you're like, yeah, but all the net benefits of having a star player like point forward are all going to be there. So it doesn't matter. And it's like, no, you're like, yes, Ben Simmons, the star role player, is the like optimal version of Ben Simmons. He's sort of a like star utility player, but it's, you can't have them both. So if we're playing Ben Simmons for 15 minutes behind Bruce Brown, you don't like, he's averaging like 5 points and 2 assists for the series. And like, that's not going to, in my opinion, in my world, that doesn't meaningfully raise our championship expectations. But if he's playing 25 minutes, like, you know, almost starter minutes, and he's a total version of himself, of course it does. Of course that moves the needle. But I just don't like this idea that like people are like, yeah, I'll play like 10 to 15 minutes and we'll be like, we'll coast to a championship. It's just not realistic.
Well, whose role does he take?
That's what I'm saying. It's a Kessler Edwards, James Johnson sort of minutes.
Well, this is the thing. Here's the playoff rotation. So let me go back to the game against the Cavs and see who actually played basketball. Obviously, we had thought going in that like he would take James Johnson's minutes. James Johnson is not on the team, which is kind of, you know, people that were looking at that as sort of like reading the tea leaves that Ben Simmons is going to come back. Here was the rotation against the Cleveland Cavaliers: Durant, Bruce Brown, Drummond, Kyrie, Seth Curry. Drummond only played 19 minutes. Nick Claxton played 29 minutes in that game. We have to have a Nick Claxton conversation because he's playing just about as well as he's ever played in his career. Then it was Kessler, Goron, and Patty Mills. So that's a 9-man rotation. It's going to be interesting because I think Claxton and Drummond are basically just going to be splitting those center minutes. KD is obviously in there. I thought it was understood that maybe when Ben Simmons would come back that Bruce Brown's minutes would be cut. But that was before we had the Brownissance that we're currently living in. And now he is one of the most essential members of this team. So it's going to be interesting how they sort of do it. It's basically like, does Ben Simmons become almost like KD and Kyrie relief, where so that Kevin Durant doesn't have to play 42 minutes and Kyrie don't have to play 42 minutes, you can give them like an extra 3 minutes each. Ben plays with one or the other, and then you put Ben out there to do, you know, maybe give Bruce Brown a little relief too. Like, he's basically like the guy, because he's so versatile, you could basically give him 3 minutes from each of the starters, and then you add up, that adds up to 15 minutes. I don't know. That's what's weird, is that this team now, I don't know whose minutes he's taking besides the fact if you basically take away Drummond minutes into Claxton minutes. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do. Can I blend this into a...
Blend it.
...an email from Cheerboy?
Vitamix that shit.
Anthony Seneskalchi. Beautiful names. Mm. Everyone's got such beautiful names. So he basically says, assuming Ben Simmons does lace them up for the series, what kind of minutes restrictions do you expect him to be on? So yep. That's the first part. He's got a second part, too, about looking ahead and Bruce Brown's... Bird's right situation. I don't think we want to get too bogged down in that. I like the question. We'll probably get to that in the off season. I'm just going to stick on the playoff series here. So,
Anthony, re-email us, because that's a big question.
It's a big one, and Mike's got plenty to say about it. But assuming Ben Simmons laces them up this year, what kind of men's restriction do we expect him to be on? And that's like, you know, it's an impossible thing to know, and it's hard to, you know, we're two guys.
Why do you say that? It's like the Nets are very honest and open and transparent yeah. about everything they
I
do. Mean,
I think I got to tell you, I think it's a interesting assumption. There's obviously like a whole lot of social media posting that's supposed to get us to, you know, post eyeball emojis and stuff like that. And I've learned to turn off my feeling valve on those types of things a long time ago. I guess two-part question. Gun to your head, Mike, is Ben Simmons playing basketball in the series? And then if so, is he on a severe minutes restriction?
Whoa. One sec, Bri. You there?
I'm there.
Jeez Louise, one second.
Okay, I got you. I'm going to keep this rolling.
Yeah, you keep it rolling.
I'm going to keep this rolling. People, and you know.
All right, you there?
I'm here.
I'm back.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was there the whole time. For some reason, my AirPods popped on. This is just the casualties of doing this in an alleyway in Charleston. And I apologize to all of our listeners. You know, I care so much about audio quality. And I know this is not going to be perfect, but I love you all. We had to do this
pod. If anyone is in Charleston right now and you hear a voice from a boy down a well, it's Mike. Don't worry. He's there recording a podcast.
So here's what's interesting about Ben Simmons. We are told that it's a pain management issue, right? That he, of course, he has to ramp and his legs have to be under him. But if it's a pain management issue and we're assuming that the ramp is going to be rather kind of quick, the moment that it becomes clear that he will not be in severe pain if he plays basketball, I don't know if there's going to be a big minutes restriction. I think there will be a minutes restriction for the first two games. And after that, it's no holds bar. You know what I'm saying? Because this isn't a knee. This isn't a surgery injury where you're kind of working your way back. This isn't Kevin Durant's Achilles. What this is a back pain issue that we were told was a little, again, Glue Guys investigates. We were initially told it was just a little back issue. Mm-hmm. And now it's become this saga. So if he's healthy and if he's deemed able to play, there should be maybe one or two games of minutes restrictions, and then it should be you can play 40 minutes. Did you see the schedule for the playoffs for this series?
I know. It's really bizarre.
The games are so spaced out.
And then the first week, but then the second week, they're incredibly packed together.
Yeah. So, of course, them being spaced out at the beginning helps the chances that Ben Simmons arrives earlier in the series, if he does arrive.
Also, I don't know if you saw that Woj had a thing about Robert Williams coming back sooner rather than later. Did we talk about that? I don't know. Everything's blending together.
Well, I saw Ime Udoka say specifically that Williams is probably going to come back sooner or later. Like, yeah. He said that publicly. So, you know, okay, let me ask you this. And this isn't reality. Would you, if you got Ben Simmons, but that also meant that Rob Williams was on the floor for the Celtics, would you take that? Or would you rather both of them be removed from the board?
I would take that.
Removed from the board or taking Ben?
Taking Ben plus Time Lord. I just think it's, I think it's the better player. Obviously, this goes into this whole big, like, he's a hard player to integrate, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's that talking point, which, you know, whatever. But I just want to see us at full maximum potential as soon as humanly possible, because, you know, honestly, I do think that our championship contention, honestly, for me, does actually kind of rest in having the depth that Ben Simmons offers us. And maybe that's not a hot take at all, but I think it'd be really tough getting out of Boston, then Bucks, without that level of depth. I think is tough for us. Just it'd be helpful.
Yeah, Ben is more important for the Bucks series than the Celtics one, but you have to get through the Celtics to get to the Bucks.
Yeah.
And we obsess about the idea of what Ben Simmons is going to do to the Nets defense in a positive way. I think that would be very legit, and I'm excited for that. But this team really does need a real point guard. Not that Ben Simmons is like a real point guard. He's not Goran. Mm. Like, Goran is obviously, he's a vet. He's on the, you know.
I don't even know what Goran is right now. It's another one of these, like, sort of weird, like, I wish that there wasn't a question mark around him. I wish he could just, like, run the second unit, but he's like a spot-up shooter right now.
He's on the backside of his career. He has maybe one more year left in the league, I think.
He does seem diminished. I hate to say it.
Yeah. So this team needs, Steve Nash said it himself, that Kyrie's best if he's off the ball because he's so dangerous and he can do so much if he's not the primary ball handler, right? He can accept that pass, quickly attack the defense and score. Ben is the only player on this team besides Goran who could be a point guard. That's not Kyrie or Kevin Durant, right? And what's going to happen in this series so much is the Celtics are so incredibly smart and they are so crafty on defense. They're going to double Kevin Durant at times. They're going to double Kyrie at times. And they're going to make Seth Curry, Bruce Brown, Drummond beat them, right? Mm-hmm. Ben is like the one possibility on this team who can receive that pass and create real mayhem besides Kyrie Irving or Kevin Durant. You know, Seth Curry is ultimately dependent on being open. He can get open, but he's mostly dependent on being open. Drummond is more likely to do something kind of silly on offense than being open to make something look really great. And Bruce, of course, is completely dependent now on just being wide open and, you know, doing his little jumper or his little floaters or his improved three-point shot. Simmons is going to be key if he's healthy and can do the thing that they need him to do.
As I actually like think about these two teams stacking up, and this will bleed into another email here, but like they are kind of part of the yin and the yang here. They're very similar in composition in a couple of ways, which is that like basically they lean on two wing scorers, both of them, to actually do the thing, and they tend to not really complement each other. They're sort of ISO scorers that take turns. I think, like, you know, in that matchup, in that Marvel versus Capcom matchup, you take Kyrie and Kevin Durant, you know, 9 times out of 10. I don't know anyone who argues with that. Maybe 10 times out of 10, Mike.
Yeah.
And
Bill Simmons would argue with that, but yeah.
He would be wrong to do that.
Even like the Bruce Brown v.
Well, this is
Marcus
sort of
Smart.
Yeah. So then there's like the other part of it, which is like, who do you surround them with? And we have like basically space and pace, like primarily offense. And then they have like space and pace, but primarily defense minded players. So it is a bit of a equal match in that opposite regard. But let me blend that neatly into Cherboy Max Bray's email. Look at me go, Mike. Are you watching this? This is crazy.
You're hosting the show.
Just hosting this thing. Hi, Mike and Brian. I'm sure Brian remembers me as Brooklyn Max from the Twitch and Brooklyn Nets Max from the Discord. Shout out to the Discord. Shout out to the Dirty Stream on Switch. If you want to know what the Dirty Stream is, it's a big old secret, but you have to be in the Discord to figure that out, which, hey, we have a vanity URL. The link is in the Twitter bio. You can't miss it, and it's in the YouTube description below. You cannot miss it. You got to get in there.
What is it? Isn't it?
It's a chat app.
Discord.gg/GlueGuys. Yeah.
That's it. Love the
Discord.
Pod.
Discord.gg/glue guy.
Nicely done, Mike. Love the pod. But anyway, let me get right into it. I know talent wins out. I know that basketball is not entirely a one-on-one game. But, and this is a big but, even if you think Bruce can play up a position defensively, one of Kai or Curry has to guard one of Brown or Tatum, unless Durant does, in which one of them has to guard Horford or Tice. Does this lack of size matter? Normally, I'd say show double teams, play help, etc. But as we seem to agree, I don't have much faith in Nash. Thanks for reading my email. This assumes starters that play Sunday. So I actually had a weird, you know, a sort of not epiphany, but like just watching that Cavs game last night and watching whenever Nick Claxton switched out onto Darius Garland, that it was the only player for whom Darius Garland could not just like auto blow by. Obviously Darius Garland is a much different player than anybody that we've mentioned here, but like I think that Nick Claxton is coming along or like right at the right time. We've often talked about him being sort of this, like, every season begins with like our, you know, our defensive hopes and dreams rest on Nick Claxton, but like he has low key like really ascended in the last couple of months, or specifically last couple of weeks. Not to say that this is like a big, you know, negating factor. You don't obviously play Nick Claxton to start a defensive set on either of those two players. But in terms of how switch heavy we are, and we're like incredibly switch heavy, but also so are the Celtics. I like switching out Nick Claxton on either of those two guys. I know this is a crazy thing to say. I know, because we don't have any, there's obviously no like other real good response to this as like a defensive minded player other than Bruce Brown, which I guess you go on Jalen just because the size difference for Tatum. So that's like, you know, to Max Bray's point, probably the less good matchup. But you hide Kyrie on, I don't know actually, because this goes back to the 76ers game where Kyrie just ate James Harden's soul alive. So like he can play up to the moment, but like that's not something you want to lean on. It's like, obviously he does it in fits and starts. And then again, you know, since the last couple of months, the Nets rank 12th in defensive efficiency. We're not like this idea that we're just like a horrific defensive team is not super borne out by the data at the moment. Obviously we watch this team pretty closely and we see the optics and we give up whole ass quarters pretty regularly. So, but it's like, it comes in fits and starts. That's sort of my opinion about it, which is points to a lack of consistency, which points to a lack of sort of coherent leadership, which probably points to Nash needing to get his shit together.
Yeah. I think we're going to see some Kyrie on like Al Horford and Daniel Tice at times, just because they're not going to hold the ball ever. Like Horford's obviously a very crafty passer, and he could obviously punish Kyrie down low, but what do you want the Celtics to throw away their offensive game plan just so Al Horford would have to post up Kyrie. Like, that is almost one of those things where you throw off the opponent so much by a mismatch that they have to then go to that mismatch.
It's like akin to daring Giannis to shoot threes, but like daring Tice to like go to his post post play against Kyrie. I love it.
Well, what I'm interested in is does Nash and the Nets get very aggressive in doing the doubles against Tatum and doubles against Jaylen Brown and really having, you know, we talk about this and everyone thinks, we talked about at the beginning, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, they get doubled all the time because it forces then Bruce Brown or Drummond or Curry to beat that other team. The Nets can employ the same defensive strategy where like Bruce Brown starts on Jason Tatum and Kevin Durant's a great off-ball defender. Kevin Durant knows exactly the move that Jason Tatum is going to be trying to execute as he's doing it. No one understands that better than Durant. Durant then comes with the double, and Tatum then has to pass out to Horford, Tice, or Marcus Smart to try to then score the bucket, right? You know, when Derek White's on the floor for the Celtics, he's kind of an X factor too. He's much craftier than those guys, than the other role players with the ball. But like, the Nets can attack Jaylen and Jason in waves like the Celtics can do too. And this goes back to your Nick Claxton thing. I don't know if Claxton's experienced enough as a defender to be really efficient in that. But him as a help defender on a double is like a super scary thing for an offensive player because he's so long and so athletic that he can quickly get to that double and basically smother the offensive player and make it very difficult. And he's quick enough to where he can recover back to the hoop if the play breaks down and someone's going to the bucket, right? Like, he has a lot of that flexibility. Drummond has it too, just because he's so big and he is athletic, but he's not the same, obviously, in terms of spring ability, if you will. So, I'm so excited for this series because I really think there's a lot that could be done. And it all comes back to, like, who on the Nets on the offensive side can help Kyrie and Kevin Durant so that they just don't get loaded up on? And then can the Nets sort of treat Jaylen and Jason the same way that Kevin Durant and Kyrie are treated? Can they then disrupt the Celtics to make it really hard for Horford, Tice, or Marcus Smart to have to try to win the game, right? I mean, it's a chess match.
Of the many ramps that's been going on, one of the ramps that has, like, just basically, it's tiny. This tiny ramp that just led to nowhere. It was like a doorstop. It was like LaMarcus Aldridge ramp. Where was that ramp? Where is LaMarcus Aldridge in all this? And why is he playing so few minutes and why are they so mean?
He was off-ramped, man.
Yeah, they off-ramped LaMarcus.
He's off the Kosciuszko Bridge, you know? He's gone.
He is. I'm just going to quickly check what time we're at. Perfect.
Yeah, let's do one more question and then we'll do series predictions.
Okay. Let me pick
up. Unless if you want to do like a couple quickies.
There's a lot of similar ones, but let me go to. Oh, hey guys, what's going on? This is from Duncan, your boy Duncan Green.
Duncan.
He says, hey guys, what's going on? What's going on, Mike? What's going on with you?
Hey, nothing. I'm sweating like a banshee.
I'm obviously stoked about the win. This is the Cavs win, obviously, but the second half collapse was far from inspiring. Looking at the box score, it doesn't feel like they had any dominant quarters. We just seemed to let them chip at it until it almost got scary. What is your diagnosis, and what does Brooklyn need to do to protect leads like this one better against a better-than-Cleveland-Boston squad? Thanks, guys. Thank you, Duncan. A thoughtful question. I don't have any real ideas for this. Let me try to think. Let me come up with one on the spot here.
Well, it would be having Chris Paul. Having a heady point guard who can drain the clock and then execute a play at the end that gets the team of open bucket. I mean, unfortunately, what happens, because the offensive system that Steve Nash has developed around Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, we've talked about this so many times, it's so iso ball heavy because those guys are so gifted at getting their shot, is when Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are holding the ball and draining the shot clock, the entire defense knows that around the 8 or 7 second mark, Kyrie or Kevin are going to then try to attack the basket and put up a shot. Yeah. And the whole defense can focus in on Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving as they make their moves, as the shot clock ticks down. And the defense knows, even if Kyrie or Kevin Durant pass the ball, it only can make one pass. So it makes defense not easy, but it makes it sort of like much more manageable where a guy like Chris Paul, he may drain the clock, but he has the ability, the whole floor is open to him because he could make any pass. He knows the floor better than those two guys. I mean, Chris Paul's an all-time point guard. So that's what happened. I mean, it's just a product of the system that they run. They run an ISO-heavy system, and if the shot clock ticks down, it becomes obvious what's going to happen, making it easy for the defense.
I think that's super true of like where we fall into place at that. Like basically, like and this is the opposite of what used to be the like the story of our team, which is that we start off games slow and then you know give it up an early lead and then give and like try to like get it win it back in the second quarter, so on and so forth. It seems like we have a plan to start some of these games. Like the Cavs, that first quarter was awesome. It was super lit AF, as the kids say, Mike. And
true.
It was.
I don't know if they even say that anymore.
They do. They're still saying it, and they love it, and I love it too. But they. So what happens is we like basically defer to, and this is kind of like an interesting sort of microcosm. We've talked about this all the time, but it goes back to the bucket getting sort of philosophy of our two star players, and also their like leadership sort of mentality, which is like I love Kevin Durant. I love that he has the ability to go nuclear and just take over a game. I often wonder if it's the most efficient style of play to win at the end of these games. Obviously, when he plays, we win more often than we don't, and it's hard to argue with those results. But like going back to Game 7 of the Bucks series last year or whatever, like obviously that was a tour de force performance. Also, Game 5, and like
when we hammerjacked their ass,
in Game 5, and then didn't do that in Game 7. You know, it feels like it's the kind of thing that like it's immaculate to watch. It's awe-inspiring, but is it the most efficient thing? Because sometimes you can tell Kevin gets locked into some very difficult. You can tell he wants to shoot and he's going to do it, and he plays what the kids are calling. This is what the kids also call. They call it hero ball, Mike. This is very new one. You haven't heard this one before.
Yeah, I know some kids.
And I don't want to call it hero ball because that has Kevin Durant.
Well, it's sexist.
It's
because
is it?
It could be heroin ball.
It could be heroin. I'm going to do a heroin ball in a second too. Sorry.
Why do you think I'm sweating in a car in an alley?
Yeah, we've fallen on hard times.
all of that Athletic Greens money and all the BetMGM money
just turned into an heroin bowl, and here we are. You get what I'm saying. So, like, it seems like we start out with a play, and I wonder if that isn't like there isn't some kind of internal tug of war on who gets to control the sort of strategic arc of the team over the course of a game, because like. You know, Kevin Durant is going to get what he wants. It's his team, and he's going to have it. And, you know, I think it is again, it's awe-inspiring. I love it. I wouldn't trade it in for anything in the world. Is it more efficient than the kind of style we play in seemingly in the first quarters where, like, you use Bruce Brown as, like, a zone buster and, like, he either shoots a weird floater or, like, sets up Nick Claxton for an alley-oop and, like, fun, interesting space and pace stuff happen and everyone seems, like, cohesive? Is it better than that? I'm not sure. I don't know.
It probably is, right?
Yeah, I mean,
if you're the other team, you're like, thank God Bruce Brown has the ball.
Yeah, I know. It's weird to say because, yeah, I mean, ultimately, you're probably right. Like, I guess it just like our team is going to have to come down to just like this brute force. Like, we're just like an ogre with a club, you know, and our club is Kevin Durant. It's a great club, you know, it's a really good club to have.
Everyone knows that ogre's just going to club people, right? Like the ogre, he doesn't have a cool mace. He doesn't have like little arrows or anything. Like he's at that club.
It's the kind of club that's really just a tree. It's got like a stick. Like it's got leaves hanging off it. It's just a torn. Yeah.
It's a shame that James Johnson is on this team because I always love the end of game James Johnson option of him being open from three, dribbling and waiting for someone to do something, and then he goes, "Ah, fuck it," and just drives to the hoop.
Yeah,
and
we have great things happen.
All right, any more, or should we just do series prediction?
I think we should transition to say thank you to everyone, and also if you didn't get your email read, please don't let that affect you going forward. Don't take it as it's just we get a lot.
It's literally that I'm in a car sweating.
Yeah, we got a lot of emails, and we can't get everybody. Love you guys. We'll get to them. You know, we'll get to eventually. Mike,
I have two predictions series, that we have to answer.
Yeah, give me the predictions.
The first one is Ben Simmons going to play?
I hate this prediction. This is the worst one. Like I'm supposed to know what
our duty.
if Ben Simmons had a child or not, like his epidural went well. Like, I can't tell. I don't know. Look, I think if we get real, I don't think he plays game one. I think if games one and two are looking real scary, I think it's very possible he comes back in games three and four. I think it's possible.
I don't think anything in the series, I'm not even kidding. I think sort of.
You think he's going to come out and play game one? You think it's really about to happen?
No. I think there's like, everyone's asked Steve Nash, what is the Ben Simmons timeline? And he's like, we don't have a timeline. I don't know a timeline. They have a timeline. You know, they have an idea internally of when he should play because they're like, okay, he hasn't felt pain in 3 days and he's done this. Like, we understand, like, we will give him a week, right? I don't think anything in the series is going to impact whether he comes back or not. I think he's back by what? Game two is like Wednesday, like a week from today, right?
Yeah.
So I think he's back for that game, if not for that game three where it's at home.
Well, how is that so different from what I said? Oh, you just think because it's like just the time. That's all that matters.
Yeah, I think it's all time. I think it's time-based. It's Doctor Strange-based. It's not sort of...
I think if we come in there and wreck house in game one and two, that allows for more time.
Okay, I see that. I think he comes back. If he doesn't come back in this series, he's never coming back.
Yeah, good take.
We've seen enough progress of him being out on the floor, him taking Instagrams of his shoes, that if he's not back in this series, then like this has all been a fraud and a sham and a disaster. So I think he comes back, and that would be a big deal. So my series prediction is the Nets win in six.
Whoa, confident. I actually like it. The ball's on you. That's nice, Mike.
Dude, you want me to bring the zoom down?
Let's see those grainy balls. Sorry.
I think the Nets win in six. I think it's going to be a very tight series. I think every game, I don't think there'll be a single blowout. But there's a lot to fear about the Celtics, but there's also some pretty big holes. They're not a good shooting team. They don't have a dynamic sort of ball creator. Jalen Jason can hit shots, but Jason Tatum's amazing, and there's nothing you could say against him. But they don't have the James Harden, Chris Paul, like, really control of a pace point guard. And that's been the big problem for the team. And I think the Kyrie, we talked about this before. If you rank the best players in the series, Kevin Durant's number one, easy. And Jason Tatum's number two. And I would argue Kyrie Irving is number three over Jaylen Brown. And if you have two of the top three players in the series and the number one guy, you usually win the series. I think the Nets' role players are better. The only thing is that the Celtics have a much better system, so that elevates their role players. But I think Drummond's better than a Horford or Tice. Marcus Smart is better than Bruce Brown at some things, but actually Bruce Brown is better at understanding his role. There's no one on the Celtics like Seth Curry or Patty Mills if Patty Mills is right. And I don't fear anyone on the Celtics bench but Derek White. And I don't really fear him. I just think he's a competent, like a George Hill 2.0, where he's like that steady, solid point guard who can make plays and hit some threes, but he's not like ever going to blow you away in a game. So I think the Nets have potentially a higher ceiling role players. I think they have the best player in the series. I think they have the third best player in the series. And if Ben Simmons comes back, and even if Rob in Williams comes back, I know it's going to take a lot for Ben Simmons. Like, it's going to be hard to integrate him into the team. It won't be seamless. He hasn't played basketball in a year. But if you get any amount of interesting basketball from him, particularly transition buckets, increased rebounding, those two things, and like the ability to be that pressure release valve for Kevin and Kyrie, that you have this third guy who's a really great ball handler, a really great passer, and because of his size, if guys are switching on to Ben Simmons, he's not going to be like flustered by really anything on that level, like besides being fouled. So I think Nets in six, they win, and then the world shakes and is rocked, and people are freaking out and saying, holy shit, the Nets are going to win the NBA championship.
Yeah.
They dominate it, not dominate it, but they beat the Celtics in six. we have to reevaluate what's about to happen in this playoffs.
Well, you really stole all the glory there, so I appreciate that. But, you know, well done. You hit all the points. You hit all the points. I will say one, you missed one incredibly important point, Mike, because I agree with you on all counts, but you had a glaring mistake and that you missed in appraising the two best players in Kevin Durant and Jason Tatum. It is just a true thing that there is a fundamental difference in these two players, which is that Kevin Durant is a complete psycho competitor. And this is a very Skip Bayless-y take that I'm going to give you. But having watched him basically like commits seppuku like suicide on the court against the Bucks in that series last year, you know, the Nets fans haven't really had guys like that ever at any point. Like our star, like the version
Hunter
of
Botch.
Yeah, the versions of that we had a lot of great Vince Carter years.
He was not gonna
die on the court in the way that Kevin Durant like exhibits. And it's like it's both it's amazing to watch. It's a little scary to watch at times because you know it creates that kind of that perfect tension of like, oh my God, he's like really willing to sacrifice. It feels like a real sacrifice. That sacrifice comes through the screen. Jason Tatum, to my knowledge, does not have that gear. That seventh gear, Mike. Seventh
gear of hell.
He doesn't have it. And these are qualitative. These are dumb arguments. But this is where I go because you already mentioned everything. And I do think it matters a lot that Kevin Durant is the more, I don't know what you call, primal competitor. You know, he really has like a psycho competitor streak inside of him that I don't think Jason Tatum does. And for that reason, I actually do agree with you, but I have Nets in seven because I'm a bigger wimp than you are.
That means they win in Boston, right?
I don't even factor that kind of stuff in.
We got through this whole thing without mentioning that Kyrie stepped on Lucky the Leprechaun.
Do you think he'll do it again?
I pray he
I
does.
Really hope he does. I mean, now at this point, like, let's lean all the way in. Let's do it.
I want all of the Nets to stomp on Lucky.
A big collective. A little Irish jig on him.
All right. Well, this what a great episode. Thank you for listening. I really hope the audio, I mean, I'll listen to it, but I really hope it worked out for everyone.
It's going
to
be great.
I hate it when podcasts deliver really poor audio. And, you know, we're here along for the ride. Brian and I will try to pod after every game that we can. Not Easter Sunday. Brian has to...
I got to pay my respects.
Dip his head in water and eat wafers.
I do. I'm going to be baptized. Yeah. Big day for me. The baptism.
But we will be podding often and frequently. Everything will be on YouTube. Check out the Glue Guys on YouTube. We have about 1,000 subscribers. I appreciate
we're almost there. No, movie. We need those subscribers. So we haven't gotten to 1,000. So you know, fire it up, get there.
Yeah, if you subscribe to this podcast, just subscribe on the YouTube because you're going to get. Not only do you get sort of like the full show, which is really fun to watch, particularly when I'm in a car in an alleyway in Charleston, South Carolina. Des Lombardo, our social video content extraordinaire, he's making these great shorts that are really fun to watch. They're all on there.
Huge.
So just dive. Just enjoy this. Dive we're in. Creating a content universe for you all that revolves around the Nets, and we're just the flat Earths rotating.
Like you finally got, like you're in the vortex of heat and beer, and we got to go. That's it. You did it. We did it. You got out of this thing alive, Mike. Congrats. Tell us a scary story. Just kidding. Don't do that. We're gonna
cropsy.
we're gonna take off. Say bye, Mike. Say it.
The tails.
Okay, we're ready. Goodbye. God, that is scary. All right, bye.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.